This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the Worldwide Wave.
This is a Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe, one queer story at a time. A hearty thank you to all of the Joy shows doing a tremendous job right now to keep LGBTI radio on air during these challenging times. I'm Matt, and we may be locked down, but we are not locked out, as I'm joined remotely by Paul.
Good evening.
Hello, Shannon.
Hi, everybody.
And hi-de-ho, Stefan.
Hi. One thing that COVID-19 has not stopped is a referendum in Russia to change the constitution. Russians have been going to the polls to remove term limits, allowing current President Vladimir Putin to remain in power until 2036, if he so chooses. Given the anti-LGBTI laws that have been implemented under his current rule, some fear success would mean heightened attacks on Russia's queer community.
Ira Rodugina is a PhD student, author from Moscow, who specializes in the history and homosexuality in Russia. The once very liberal queerness of Russia is under threat, and Ira is not afraid to speak out against the ruling regime.
Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
I'm not worried in a sense, you know, you can imagine that. I'm not worried because I know that Putin probably is forever in Russia. I'm trying not to think about him. You know, he's not just useful for me as a person and as a scholar. So, of course, I voted against this amendment. But I'm pretty sure that they will adopt it. So, well, what can I do? Nothing. So I prefer to be focused on my job, on my family.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
International communities have flagged concerns with the planned constitutional changes in Russia that will allow Vladimir Putin to retain the presidency for another 16 years. But within Russia, it appears certain that the change will go through. Ira Rodugina knows more about the ups and downs of Russia LGBTI community across the centuries, having studied and written about Russia's rich queer history. Given that Russia has previously had a fairly liberal approach to LGBTI rights, historically, we ask Ira what has changed in Russian society.
Well, it's a huge question. I don't know where to start. Well, probably it's important to know the date 2013 to understand LGBT situation right now, because it's the year when so-called anti-gay legislation was adopted by the Russian authorities. I would say that it was the first anti-gay law since decriminalization of male homosexuality in 1993. The main idea of this law is that you cannot equate homosexual person and heterosexual person publicly, especially addressing children. So, for example, if you are organizer of, let's say, movie festival, LGBT or not, just movie festival, and there is a LGBT movie, and somehow there is a minor among the public, and you are the organizer, police would come to check the screening, you can't be fined. You cannot be imprisoned, you just can't be fined. And I would say that the main damage of this law, not that practical, but symbolic, I would say. And since then, the situation with the LGBT rights has been deteriorating. But from the other hand, paradoxically, this law created a space, public space, for discussion on queer and LGBTQ issues in Russia for the first time, again, in post-Soviet Russia. So before that, there was a huge queer scene in Moscow and in St. Petersburg, but LGBT agenda lacked political dimension. Yeah. Now it has definitely, it has political dimension, and a lot of people, especially young people in the 20s, they're very vocal, they're very active and trying to trying to pay attention to queer stuff, history, I don't know, cinema, of course, political rights. So right now, I would say that the situation from the one hand is better than it was 10 years ago. But from the other hand, of course, homophobia exists, especially in province.
So is homophobia now more prominent because of this law from 2013? Do people feel they can be homophobic now?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I think this law, when this law was adopted, it was made very public. So a lot of media paid attention to this law. And just a funny or not so funny example, for the first time, I was called like a faggot because I look masculine, not feminine. Exactly after the adoption of this law, just randomly in St. Petersburg. And I think that the person who called me this way, he somehow, he probably heard about this law. He probably heard that Putin said that we have to protect our children. And then he saw me and I just looked like a queer and he called me, "Hey, faggot. What are you doing here?" So, yeah. I think that, well, maybe it's an illusion, but I think that it's, of course, it's connected because homophobic people got this idea, very explicit idea of queer people, you know, which I think did not exist before that law.
I'm sorry to hear that. It's never very pleasant.
Well, no worries. I mean, I'm used to it, and again, from the one hand, it's great because I think that I'm a very strong person, and I don't care. So, don't be sorry. Well, of course, it's not good, but
it's
still.
Not good, yeah. So, with this anti-propaganda laws, how hard is it for the LGBTI community to be visible?
Well, a practical thing that we always, when we are public, you know, we always have to keep in mind, you know, to check our public, to be sure that there are no minors among our public. For example, I'm used to give lectures on history of queer in Russia, and I always ask the organizers, you know, to check the minors among the public, because it's the real threat for us to face police in that case. But visibility, well, again, I think that LGBT agenda becomes more visible, definitely, than a decade ago. And now LGBT publics on Instagram, on Facebook, LGBT, I don't know, lectures, performances, screenings, they're thriving in Russia, especially in Moscow and in St. Petersburg. So it's, you know, for me now it's much more to live here in Russia and be a lesbian. It's much more easier now than it was 10 years ago. or 15 years ago, because now, well, you can easily find people to talk to or get support or, I don't know, entertain. And so, yeah.
So it seems like it's because of this, there is kind of a more visibility for the community and more of a political, not political, but the people have been able to get together and do something. Is that what you mean?
I mean, this pressure from the authorities, I think, gives us space, you know, to be vocal, to be visible, despite, again, paradoxically, but despite this pressure. Yeah.
Russian academic Ira Rodogina on Joy 94.9. The anti-propaganda laws coming up again. It's really good to hear what's actually happening on the ground and that really practical thing that if you've got an event or something, you've got to check right at the start, make sure there's no kids around before you even start talking about anything or showing a film or whatever. Just those little things you wouldn't think of.
It's interesting that it's, as she points out, it's not specifically aimed at the LGBT people. It could be any event, but the anti-propaganda law is specifically against spreading the message of LGBTI people. So that's a sort of a distinction, if you see what I mean, that I hadn't actually cottoned on to previously.
It's the who's looking after the children law again.
Yeah, it seems to be quite a recurrent theme on in anti-LGBT. But it's not just children, though. I mean, it's minors. So it can be, you know, teenagers and people that are might be struggling with their sexuality and they deny anything that could actually help. I think that's one of the things. It's not just about pornography and things like that. It's about gender identity, really, and all these things that are seen as propaganda. And seeing something as propaganda as well is quite arbitrary. It's not really something objective or subjective in this context. You can see anything can be seen as propaganda, really. You can make it look like propaganda if you want. So I think it's you know, on surface, it just appears like pornography and stuff, but it's much deeper than that, I think.
It's the use of the word propaganda. So it's like you're promoting something. You're not actually recognizing the fact that these people living with this, it's not a choice, it's not a decision, it's something that people are living with. And calling it propaganda seems to indicate that if you control the message, then you'll control the impact, and that's not what happens.
Yeah.
But do you think, though, I mean, propaganda is often something that is leveled at authorities, at governments and the like. This is really sending a message to the broader community that it's homophobia is okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because at the same time, like they haven't criminalized the act. So it does seem a little bit like it makes it harder, doesn't it, to outright criticize. I mean, obviously there are huge criticisms of Russia, but it does at the same time, like you can't say it's illegal exactly. And they go, oh no, it's not illegal, there's no problem. But then when you get into the weeds of actually what it's like, it works to create an atmosphere that makes it so hard to be gay or to recognize that that's even what you are. Because if you grow up somewhere where you can't talk about it, you can't see things about it, you can't read it in books, I mean, it makes it harder for you to recognize what that feeling is in yourself. And it just works long term to just create an atmosphere where it feels impossible.
I did like Ira's take on the positive side of that, though, that this whole issue has created a space for people to talk publicly about LGBTI issues, and that very heartening that young people are getting very vocal. Coming up, we find out why Chechnya's LGBTI community is so much more at risk despite having virtually the same laws. You're on World Wide Wave.
This is Scott from the Equality Network Scotland on the World Wide Wave.
Even though we are currently broadcasting outside the studios, you can still message us by Facebook, World Wide Wave, or W3Joy.
We're speaking tonight with Moscow-born scholar Ira Rodogina. Russia is frequently in the international headlines for LGBTI issues, mostly negative, including here on World Wide Wave. We asked Ira how much they realise that the world has been watching LGBTI rights in their home country.
I think that since that law, I think that Russian LGBTI agenda has got a lot of attention from media outside of Russia, and you can find profiles on Russian queer in many, many magazines and journals outside of Russia. So, yeah, I think that that Russian queer people get a lot of attention from the world, and of course, it's linked with the situation in Chechnya and the situation of gay and lesbian rights there.
I was going to ask a little bit about Chechnya, and I mean, it's Chechnya is under Russian rules and have the same law, but the situation seems to be much worse in Chechnya for LGBT people.
Yeah.
And I think lately there's been another so-called gay purge. So why do you think it seems so worse in Chechnya than in Russia?
Well, Chechnya is not just, well, as you said, de jure, it's like Russian territory. It's a Russian, still Russian state. It's a republic, Chechen Republic, within Russian state. But I would say that it's like a different, completely different country. I mean, the legislation is the same, but they use the legislation differently. And not only in respect to LGBT rights, but, for example, the situation with women's rights is awful. So I think that the main cause, of course, is Kadyrov and his policy. Because 20, 30 years ago, Chechnya was a Soviet republic, and it was completely secular republic during the Soviet times. Now, of course, the situation is changed. And probably when we are talking about the purges, you hear only about gays, right? You never, it's just impossible to hear word lesbian in respect to Chechnya. It's just the idea of lesbianism, the identity of lesbian is just impossible to imagine and to say out loud in Chechnya. But, of course, I personally know lesbians from Chechnya who escaped their families. And now one of them, at least I know her, she lives in Moscow and she has no relation with her family whatsoever. So the only answer is Kadyrov and his very harsh policy and zero control of his policy from the center, from Moscow. So I think that this is the main reason of this brutality. But again, the information is so scarce. We know almost nothing. Well, of course, we know about these purges, but what is behind that, you know, we know very little because there is no independent press in Chechnya.
Going back to Russia, lately there is a push to change, and I think you're voting very soon to remove the presidential term limits, and that could see him being power until 2036. How worried are you about this proposed change?
It's funny because I voted yesterday, of course, against this amendment. Yeah. I'm against him from the very beginning. I'm not worried in a sense, you know, you can imagine that. I'm not worried because I know that Putin probably is forever in Russia before his death, hopefully. So I'm just trying to do my job, you know. I'm just trying to be a decent scholar, to work in the archives, to write the history of a group of queer people that existed in early Soviet Russia and a bit later. So I'm trying not to think about him because it's just not, it's not just useful for me as a person and as a scholar. So, of course, I voted against this amendment, but I'm pretty sure that they will adopt it. So, well, what can I do? Nothing. So I prefer to be focused on my job, on my family. That's it. But of course, I'm very public about my feelings towards him.
From Russia with Love, that's Russian queer history scholar Ira Rodogina on Joy 94.9. Gee, she's not afraid to speak out. I think with all these laws and with all these, she's even had homophobic attacks against her, and she just says, well, I'm not afraid.
And it was lovely speaking to her because she always was so positive about, even though the situation is not the most pleasant and quite dreadful, she was really positive and seeing that what could be done to try to turn it around. And as she was saying, in Moscow and St. Petersburg, it's not as bad, but in other more smaller places, it's quite difficult. But yes, she had this attitude of, well, I'm here to do something about it, and this is what I can do. And even if it's little, it will make a difference in the long run, which I think was really, really refreshing.
But she did say, Putin probably is forever in Russia. How do you think that'll play out? I mean, we've now got somebody who has the opportunity to cement whatever they want, really, for the next, two decades.
Well, basically, it's not going to improve the situation. At best, it won't get any worse. But if he needs to find any more scapegoats, I'm sure it will get worse.
Now, let's talk a bit about Chechnya, because it's obviously been in the news quite a lot for the purges of gay men, and very violent, indeed, gay men going missing. The idea, though, that lesbianism is impossible. So there's obviously, if not purges, then acts against lesbians, but it's not given any voice. It's kind of almost hidden away.
I mean, that's something that's like completely different to a lot of places, right, in history. Like, you often see a lot of the laws throughout history that have been about criminalization actually haven't included women. And I think that does often stem from this idea from a lot of straight men that just negates the idea that women could want to have like those sort of experiences. And therefore, if they don't have that sort of desire, why would two women have that sort of desire together? Like, I do think there is this like this real idea in a lot of places in history. And I do think that's where a lot of the lack of criminalization kind of comes from, and where this like kind of, this idea that it's just not possible, like it doesn't seem like a real thing.
Do you think there's, given that acts against lesbians in Chechnya haven't got the profile, do you think that's a positive or a negative? Do you think that, because it has got the profile, lesbians might be safer? Or is it that just it's happening and nobody knows and that's even worse?
I think it's worse. I think, obviously worldwide scrutinising of Chechnya is done not too much, but it definitely hasn't stopped much, but it is something. Even if it's like, it feels like it's something, or like it might eventually help in some way. The just completely not knowing about it and not talking about it, and it could just get worse. I mean, how bad is it? We don't know.
And I think that's what Ira was saying, that because there's no reporting, there's no press freedom, there's no press. So we actually don't know what's going on. And what we know is probably very little of what is happening, probably at a bigger scale. And it is very concerning.
I think the stories, certainly about the acts on gay men in Chechnya, actually supported people outside Chechnya who wanted to be treated as refugees, that helped them. So if it was the same thing's happening with lesbians, but it's not getting out, the story that isn't helping anyone outside Chechnya stay safe.
Coming up on Joy 94.9, we ask if that willingness to speak out places Ira under threat from government persecution. And the answer just might surprise you. This is World Wide Wave.
Hi, this is Costa Gavrielidis, the president of Accept LGBT Cyprus, and you're on the World Wide Wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe, one queer story at a time, World Wide Wave. And tonight we are in Russia. A special hello to everybody that might be listening to us on podcast. You can subscribe to receive our podcast automatically either at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or on iTunes, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast platform. And please leave us a review.
Ira has just been telling us that she is voting against the constitutional change to remove term limits. She's also very comfortable speaking out against President Putin, despite the threat that he may gain a stranglehold on the country for another 16 years. We asked Ira if it was a risk for her personally to be so public about her feelings.
I don't think so. I don't think so. At least not in Moscow, in St. Petersburg. I think it's safe to be in opposition to him. Of course, if you live in a small province town, it's much more dangerous for you to be critical of Putin, of course. But in Moscow, in St. Petersburg, there are a lot of people, believe me, a lot of people who are against him and who are very vocal about this. And last year, we had protests in Moscow, and I was, of course, a participant of this movement, as always. Yeah, I think it's just my duty. Well, I mean, it sounds very, maybe very naive, but I feel this way.
And you're pretty sure it will pass. Do you see any consequences on the LGBT community, or it will be pretty much the same?
I think that it will be pretty much the same, as you said. Absolutely.
And anything positive, any hope for the LGBT community in Russia in the future?
Yes, of course. You know, I have this joke that if you give me an access to the TV for an hour or 2 hours, I think that the situation with LGBT rights will be changed. You know, I don't think that Russian people are especially homophobic, you know, in comparison with people in Europe, for example. I think that the main danger and the main cause of this homophobia is the state policy and propaganda of homophobic ideas. So that's it. It's especially vivid when I'm talking about my research on early Soviet queer on the 1920s. You probably don't know, but Soviet Russia decriminalized homosexuality, and it was like decriminalized more than 10 years, and Stalin decriminalized it again in 1934. And this short period was very interesting. For example, I found in the archives a lot of letters from queer people to the medical experts, and they are very, very open about their homosexuality, and they hoped to be the fully fledged citizens as heterosexual people, and they called themselves homosexuals. They used this word. They wrote that they, you know, fought for their rights, and now they would like to enjoy their rights. So it was like very emancipated, I would say, narratives. And yeah, it existed. And it's very important for me to know that there were times in Russia where homosexuality was decriminalized, and it was even, you know, greeted by experts, at least by medical experts.
So it was decriminalized before the WHO removed it from the mental health.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So just want to yeah. give you an interesting example. I think it happened approximately 2 weeks ago to LGBT activists, very prominent. And one of them wrote on Facebook that he was able to get tax deduction for his husband in Russia as a family. So they were married in the States. It's just impossible for two gays to marry in Russia. So Russian state acknowledges all the marriages that are registered abroad. And in this case, it was same-sex marriage. But according to the law, Russia acknowledges all the marriages, you know, and even same-sex marriages registered abroad. So, yeah, so paradoxically, he was able to get this tax deduction for his husband as a husband, you know, even in Russia.
Yeah, so that's a positive for the community, really.
Yeah. So it's a rare opportunity, you know, to crack the system. Mm. It's still possible. Very inspiring.
Yeah, no, thank you. Ira Roldugina, speaking to us from Moscow at World Wide Wave. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I love that story of getting one over on the government, the male same-sex couple who are married in another country, but because Russia recognizes marriage regardless of anything, they can, you know, claim tax deductions for their husband. I mean, we all love being able to, you know, get something back on tax, but that would be particularly sweet, I reckon.
Yeah, I just wonder how long that loophole is going to stay there now that someone's actually found it. It doesn't matter which government, they don't like loopholes in their tax.
True. Moscow and St. Petersburg, I guess we know they have LGBTI communities. Interesting that they are almost a bit of a safe haven, both for the community to exist, but also that ability to speak out against Putin.
I think it's, I was actually surprised when she said that, because I had thought, given the media on what happens when you have a protest in Moscow or St. Petersburg, that it actually isn't safe to speak out. But maybe it's safe to speak out if you don't attend a mass rally.
There's a Russian journalist, Masha Gessen, who's queer, and she said that, she's said in the past, like, kind of a similar thing, that it's not speaking out as long as you're, like, kind of careful about it. Like, in a way, it's not too dangerous. But she said for her, the real risk was that she had three kids. Two were biological, but one was adopted with her partner. And she said that she had to send her adopted child overseas because she thought that they would take the child away because she's gay, under, like, child protection sort of thing.
Probably the propaganda law.
Because yeah, like the propaganda laws and that sort of thing. And so she said that she couldn't leave immediately, but she had to send her child to, like, a family friend that she knew overseas until they could then all leave. So, I mean, maybe it's, like, situational. Maybe it is person by person. If you are speaking out on your own, it kind of depends on the level and all that sort of stuff.
If this change goes through to the Russian laws and Putin stays there for life almost, we've got a similar law that's just been passed in China. These big countries which are getting leaders for life that are, you know, quite, it becomes quite scary. How do you think the world might react to this?
I'm not sure the world will react to it, as in the world leaders won't react, as long as the status quo is maintained?
That's a big question, and especially I think in time of COVID, where there's been so much damages to economies, I don't know that. I mean, for Australia, for example, I mean, I know we've been just saying things against China, but I don't know how far it will go because it's one of the main partners. So there's so many other relationship and other things underlying all the, you know, these relationships. And that's what the EU is actually quite a good thing, because the bloc can talk about it, can try to do things against some of this country in the world, which when you don't have a bloc like this, it's more difficult.
The danger here too that I see is that it almost normalizes this behavior. You know, if you're a kid growing up and all you've known is invisibility of LGBT people or homophobia is okay, it kind of really ingrains it in culture.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, with the conservative turn that the US has taken, I mean, their vice president would agree and stand by most of these things, wouldn't he? So, you know, it makes it harder when you also have countries that are quite large, might hold more sway or more trade power, that doesn't at the moment feel like they should need to do anything. Does make it harder to think that something will happen.
No, I agree with Shannon. I think I can't see that much changing. And I was going to say Stefan's comment about the Europe they have to be very careful about what they say about Russia. Because on their doorsteps, there's arms, you know, there's third largest army on their doorstep. And Russia does invade. It has invaded parts of Georgia. It's invaded parts of Ukraine. If someone upset either Russia or China sufficiently, who knows what would happen?
I think what's interesting, though, to counter that, I guess, you know, Russia used to be, you know, it used to compete with Berlin as the queer capital of the world. So it's been there before. That's one point. And number two, the words ring in my mind from ERA. Give me access to the TV and, you know, the situation with LGBT rights would be changed. There's clearly people who are very passionate who aren't going to let go of this.
This is Ulrike Lunacek, member of the European Parliament and co-president of the Parliament's LGBT intergroup on the World Wide Wave.
And tonight on World Wide Wave, we want to thank Moscow-born academic ERA Rodugina for talking to us. And ERA is a PhD scholar at Oxford University, and she writes on queer rights and queer issues.
And we also want to thank those who have messaged us on Facebook, Milo, Hope, Nicole, Mark, Dylan, and a heap more who have joined or interacted with us on Facebook this past week. That's W3Joy on Facebook.
And our fantastic team behind the scenes, Peter, our podcaster, and Dean, our social media master. Thanks heaps.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.